Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking about how to use Railroader to check if your Ruby on Rails application is secure. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 522, recorded March 20th, 2019. Railroader. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to play with right after the show is over. Today, it's probably going to be one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. It's good to be back.
Yes. And where are you speaking to us from? I bet something that sounds like Liverpool.
Yes, I am. I'm talking to you from my usual haunt of my little studio in Liverpool. Yeah, near the center of Liverpool in the UK.
And for those that aren't watching the video, that's a Twitch shirt you're wearing today.
I am. I'm fully branded. I'm on brand, although my camera quite cuts the name off, so I have to go like that. I need a shorter shirt or something, or a shorter body maybe. I don't know. I need to work that out. Yes, I'm on brand today. It wasn't deliberate. It just happened to come out of the, it was on top of the pile of clean shirts today, so maybe it was fate.
The top of the stack. Yes, there we go. And I'm wearing a green shirt to celebrate that we just passed St. Paddy's Day, and I had a memorable time, but I don't remember any of it. So I think it's probably the best I can say about that. And I'm currently losing my voice, so we'll see how long that lasts. But I'm currently in Seaside, Oregon, where I have a condo, and so I'm here from time to time and enjoying myself. And wanted to come here for St. Patrick's Day so that I could stumble through the nine bars that are in downtown. So that worked out pretty well from what I remember. Anyway, so today we have a three-peat. David Wheeler has been on this show now for the third time, and he's going to be talking to us today about Railroader, which is a way of detecting security issues with your Ruby on Rails programs. Now, Dan, you and I both agree that neither of us know a lot about Ruby on Rails. So we're going to be kind of stumbling our way through this show, and hopefully David will carry most of the show for us. Is there anything you want to say about that before we bring him on?
No, not really. I have done some Rails in the past, but mostly just for hobbyist kind of reasons rather than in a commercial capacity. But I'm hoping to see how it links to things like, we both do web stuff, so, you know, many web things and so on. So, yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about.
And I remember that, I forget his name now, but the guy who created Rails, that was one of the shows that I actually wondered if we could actually publish because he was uttering a swear word about every third sentence, so it was a little awkward. It was like, can we actually get away with this show? Can we still put the clean label on it and have it be published by the Twit Network? But apparently the show went out, so that was fine. It all worked out nicely. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on David Wheeler. David, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, I should say.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from Northern Virginia, which is nowhere near either of you two.
Well, I can wave in your general direction. I think it's back over here somewhere, so that'll be great.
I can wave in yours, so we'll all do it together.
Sorry, I was just going to say, it should be in the middle, shouldn't it, somewhere?
That way, yes, exactly. Welcome back to the show. This is unusual that we've actually had you, had a guest like you on for three shows, so welcome back. Tell us about Railroader. What problem are you solving when you're reaching for it?
Well, Railroader is basically a security static analysis tool for applications that use Ruby on Rails. So what that means is if you are using Ruby on Rails and you'd like to not have security vulnerabilities, that should describe all of them, this is a tool that you can reach out for, download, install, and have it run through your code and look for problems before you ship it out. Now, I want to be careful. Railroader doesn't guarantee that it can find vulnerabilities, but it's scanning and looking for common problems so you can go fix them first. It's static, and that means it's not running the program, so it's actually looking at all the code. Probably the more interesting thing from your point of view maybe is that it's a fork of an existing project that used to be open source software called Brakeman. A lot of folks who've used Ruby on Rails in the past have used Brakeman. It's a really good tool. Sure. And they recently changed their license to be proprietary. And I was very disappointed in that. So I wanted to create wanted to keep it going and needed to change the name so we could keep it going.
So Perl is very difficult to parse. This I know from, you know, having stared at things like PPI and other things like that. Is Ruby easier to parse? Are you able to actually understand with a static analysis what the code is doing?
Well, those are actually two different questions. Ruby's easier to parse. Okay. Then Perl 5, at least. I've looked briefly at Perl 6, but I haven't really delved into it. But Perl 5 is harder to parse, although Ruby actually was inspired in part by Perl. So there's actually some, you can actually point to some things and say that looks similar. From a static analysis point of view, there's good and bad. First of all, there's existing libraries for parsing Ruby. So in fact, a Railroader itself just calls out to an existing parser. It doesn't try, there's no point in rewriting a parser. There's already one. The bigger issue you pointed, though, is that Ruby, like many other programming languages, doesn't have a baked-in static type system. So in that case, it's just like Perl. Mm-hmm. It's just like Python, PHP, traditional JavaScript. And that means that it is harder for a static analysis tool to find problems. Now, there's a plus on this, and that this is that Brakeman originally, and now Railroader, is not just for Ruby in general. It is specific to Rails. Now, I don't know if you've ever worked with Rails, but Rails is a widely used web framework. If you use GitHub, if you use GitLab, and those are just two of the many programs that are built using Rails. Rails is extremely opinionated. It says, hey, this is where you put the models. This is where you put the controllers. This is where you put the views. And as a result, although it's not exactly like a static type system, there's a whole lot that you know should be happening if it's a Rails project. And that gives a static analyzer quite a bit to work with. So you can look for and say, well, wait a minute, this should be a controller. No, this is a view. This is not a view. And you can do a whole lot of things based on that information. And you can design checkers specifically that exploit that. That does mean that it doesn't work on other Ruby frameworks. For example, there's another one called Sinatra. It's not nearly as popular as Rails, but certainly people use it. But it's this Railroader won't work in that case. It's very, very focused on Ruby on Rails, but Ruby on Rails is fairly popular. So that for those who have that kind of application, it's helpful.
Rails was my first introduction, I think, to a good qualified ORM. So that, basically you would have this ability to talk directly to the database using objects. And so that was pretty cool. I'm only vaguely familiar with Rails because I just used it a little bit that way. So this is not a tool to analyze all possible security issues with Ruby in general. And by the way, I'd like to say that my understanding of Ruby is that it's sort of the weird offspring of both Perl and Smalltalk. And so I should like Ruby because those are my two favorite languages. But
yes, you should.
I just never got into Ruby at all.
I think if you got more into it, I like many languages. I should tell you that I think different languages have different strengths, and it's cool and interesting.
Sure. That said,
definitely Ruby has syntactically it doesn't look like some other languages, in the sense that it's not a brace-based languages, but on the other hand, as soon as you get into the semantics, if you're familiar with Python or Perl, you know, or Smalltalk, a whole lot of this will look very, very familiar to you. Ruby is very much supports object orientation with traditional classes and all the rest.
Now we actually have a question already from the chat room. Lawn Dog says, "What are the more common programming security issues that this tool finds?"
Okay, well, let's see. excuse me. So it can find things like possibly unescaped model attributes in the views, which is basically a cross-site scripting problem. It can detect a lot of bad string interpolations that can lead to SQL injection. You mentioned that Ruby does, I'm sorry, not Ruby, Rails has an ORM, but sometimes it's helpful to invoke SQL directly, and that's okay, but then you need to do it safely, you know, using basically prepared statements. So if you occasionally invoke SQL directly, then you need to make sure you're not just using raw string interpolation, because that typically leads you to SQL injections pretty quickly. So there's things like model find and last and so on, or finding by SQLs. There's also other kinds of string interpolations that lead to command injections. Rails has a built-in mechanism to protect against forgeries for CSRF, but you have to include it. And it's super easy to either not include it or accidentally remove it, and then suddenly that protection disappears, so it will detect if that doesn't happen. It also detects for some kind of weird oddities. You know, since I know you are a Perl level, you will appreciate that regular expressions are something that's used a lot. In Ruby, this is specific to Ruby, the caret and the dollar match the beginning and ending of a line, which is not necessarily the same as the beginning and ending of a string. So if you use another programming language, it's really common to use caret and dollar, when in Ruby you're supposed to use backslash A and backslash lowercase z for the beginning and end of the string. No problem. Railroader will detect that. Wait a minute, you're using those, you probably should have used those. And I think that's a general pattern here, is the idea is people make mistakes in any programming language. And so the idea is to try to create checkers that look for those common mistakes and then warn you about them. And I particularly like the ones where, because I use multiple languages myself, looking for ones that, you know, in this particular language, I understand why you would do this, but that's not the right construct here. Let me warn you about that and put something else and switch it to the correct construct instead. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, David, you kind of you were on the verge of answering the question I was about to ask you there. You said it can kind of fix some of this stuff automatically. How much functionality is there? Can I, you know, say to Railroader, replace certain things that are wrong, or will it just flag them up to me and say
it's just flagging. But in general, it's not hard to figure out what to fix. And I will say that typically, at least in my uses, I mean, maybe there are people who have serious. Usually, it's not reporting that many for a particular program. If you write code in a truly horrific way and it's just filled with vulnerabilities that are easily detected,
you know me quite well.
I'm not going to comment about your coding specifically. I've heard of code where there were more vulnerabilities than lines of code. For most people, it's not that situation. And so I think more automation would be good, but right now that's not really where I'm more interested in just let's find it easy reporting. Typically, they're not hard to fix.
Definitely. And we actually have another question from the IRC, which came in earlier from Roswell, who's in the IRC, who says, can you compare this tool to Brakeman? So has much changed yet? Because it's a relatively young fork, I think, isn't it?
That's right. The short answer is it isn't much different. It's very, very similar because, in fact, it's the same code. We can talk a little bit about the fun of creating a fork. I actually don't like project forks. I don't like to do project forks unless I must. Had they continued using an open source license but a different one, I'm sure I would have been just, oh, that's great, moved on. But I really wanted there to be an open source project that did this. So I felt I needed to. And you know, the stuff I've had to do so far, there's a whole lot of just little tiny things that have to be done. For example, Brakeman, I'm sure is trademarked. So, you know, we need to make sure there's a new name everywhere. Oh, wait, you know, if you do the substitutions everywhere, you got to fix things. Got to make sure you have a website, got to have a Twitter, got to have various other things. So right now, functionality, it's quite similar to Brakeman. But that's okay. Brakeman was actually a pretty good tool. That's why I was very disappointed to see the license change.
Yeah, it wasn't for technical reasons that you decided to move, to change. So how many people work on this then? Because it sounds like a lot of this is on you. Is it, do you have a community that's helping you, or are you taking a lot of this kind of burden yourself?
Well, actually, that's why I'm here. I contacted Randall because, in fact, there's a lot of folks who listen to Floss Weekly. And by the way, that includes me. I'm one of your many, many listeners. So this is one of the main reasons I'm on here is it's a good tool. But I, you know, and I believed someone needed to fork it. So since nobody else stood up and did it, I did. But I would really, really like some folks to help and join me. And it's not something where you need to do endless commitment. I intend to run this as a normal, standard, open source software project. So anybody, you make a pull request, great. If you post issue, that's great too. I would love to have more folks, but really we just, I only forked it relatively recently. And, last couple of weeks have been basically, as I mentioned, the little housekeeping nonsense, making sure there's a Ruby gem. Now we are actually using Railroader already in the CI best practices badge. I mean, after all, we were using Brakeman before. So, we're basically now using Railroader instead, but it's the same basic tool. I can already point to at least one project that's already using Railroader, but I'd love to have more users and definitely would have loved to have more contributors.
And you mentioned that, I think a lot of people are put off by, the idea that this is going to become like a massive thing that they need to do. But it sounds like you really, you just needed people to help out in any way they can, don't you? I mean, that's the core of what we do in open source.
That's right. I mean, add a test, fix a test. Hey, there's a little error in the documentation. Those things add up. It's certainly true that there are some times where you really need a big block of time. But I actually don't think that's the case here. Brakeman before it, now Railroader, a vast amount of the code is basically a bunch of little files that have the word check in them. And they just check for very, very specific conditions. And so the parser's already set up. Everything else is already set up. So if you want to add a new check, great. If you want to add a new test, that's great too. This is one of the easier projects to contribute to. And you don't even really necessarily have to know a lot about Ruby or Rails, depending on what you want to do. But obviously, if you know both of those things, that's an improvement. Ruby and Rails as well is a relatively common web framework. So there's a lot of folks who are using this and could easily contribute. So this is basically an appeal out to, hey, I think a fork needs to exist. And I think an open source software version of this project needs to exist. I've created one. Let's work together.
And I noticed in the information that you sent us about this, about the license change and so on, you were saying that at the old project, they're saying people can still use it to check their own stuff for free. But actually, it's now under another license, which they've created. So what license did you choose and why was that?
Actually, in some sense, I didn't choose. I retained the same. So the code is licensed under the MIT license. Or expect license, if you want to use that terminology. And the web information is all under CC BY 3.0. And the reason I chose this is fairly straightforward. That was what the license were originally. And I'm trying to encourage people who have contributed before to contribute again. And since they were, they accepted the license in the first place, hopefully they will be more likely to contribute under that as well. And really, MIT is a fine license. I prefer OSI licenses, and there's a number to choose from. And MIT is definitely one of the more popular ones, and that's great. So let's take that move on. And really, the goal right now is trying to get people involved.
And speaking of that, actually, because you have forked an existing project, what's the reaction been like from the community? Are people coming across? Is there a lot of people who feel the same?
Let's see. We've just started out, so I don't know if I can really give answers to some of those. But I did make a point to specifically contact the lead of Breakman, saying, "Hey, you know, you turned it into a not open source project, so I'm forking it and making an open source project." And his response was basically, he wasn't surprised. I don't actually bear, he goes by the handle President Beef. His real name's Justin Collins. I don't bear him any ill will. In fact, I'm grateful he created what I think is a really nice little project and has been maintaining it for years. But clearly his goals differ, because I want one that's open source and he's willing to not have one that's open source. So, and I think there's a lot of advantage. I don't need to pitch some of the advantages of open source to you guys. So I think there's reasons to want to have an open source version. And so but that means really that although I can get things started, I really don't want to be the sole person at all. I want to be, in some sense, the catalyst. So the challenge with being a catalyst is you got to get the word out. And so that's what I'm hoping I'm doing here today.
Definitely. And you mentioned, I'm curious as to a little bit more about how the tool kind of works, I suppose. So you talked about you have like check files, which sounds really interesting. And can I so how does that process work? I can kind of use those almost like plugins and drop them in or tell Railroader which ones to choose and which ones not to and so on.
You certainly can do that. Plugins is probably the right way to view it, although right now they're all in one big directory. But you can decide which ones to enable and which ones to disable. Probably a more common situation is disabling a particular check in a particular place or a particular file. So, for example, you know, it may very well be that for whatever reason, a particular construct you're using in one file just shoots off a whole bunch of false alarms. And so you can say, in this method or this file, please disable that. It's certainly not hard to add those sorts of things. And I should note that although I've started the project recently, I've been using the program for years. We talked earlier a while back about the CII Best Practices badge, which basically is, here are the things you should be doing. As an open source project, if you are doing those things, you can get a badge. That project, we continue to get more projects. We're over 2,000 now. I think we were under 100 when we first talked. So we've got a lot of projects involved. And, you know, before we got projects involved, one of the things we wanted to do is make sure that we're trying to squash the vulnerabilities before we released anything. And so I've been using this tool for years to reduce the likelihood that the code was vulnerable. I've actually now lost the bubble of your original question. Anything else?
It's okay. I actually had to look up, it was DHH. I was trying to remember who it was that actually was on our show had used every third word was a swear word. So that was sort of interesting. So I do have a bug report for your website.
Oh, no.
The thing is, I literally copied it into my notes. And then I kept saying, that can't be the right word. You have on your front page, Railroader is a security static analysis tool for finding vulnerabilities in applications that use Ruby on Rails.
For finding. Yes. This is a terrible funding system. all right. Well, okay. You know, if you wanted to, you could file an issue.
I could file an issue. Yes, that's great. That's great. So
I probably can remember that one, but I'll go fix it later. But indeed, you know what? This is actually my point though. Earlier, you know, many eyes do help. I would not claim that many eyes guarantee necessarily everything, but you know, if you get a bunch of people looking at stuff, even Randall Schwartz can find a problem. So
it's that obvious. It's like the nose on my face at this point.
It wasn't obvious to me, so that's great. Okay. So you know, but even little tiny things like that, again, they accumulate. You keep adding little improvements over time. It actually becomes something pretty big. I think a lot of the biggest open source software projects were started by, you know, a single idea and a small amount of code, and then you grow from there. So indeed, we'd like indeed to do this.
And I know nothing about Rails, but Roswell in the chat room just asked, does it work with Rails 6? I don't even know what that means.
That's the upcoming version of Rails. I actually haven't tested that, but it should. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any reason why it wouldn't. The Rails 6 isn't that radical a change. And remember, this program is not designed to analyze your libraries, including the Rails framework itself. It's to analyze the programs that built on top of. And I should note that the CI best practices badge, of course, was written with an earlier version of Rails, and we've moved forward and so on. There may be some tweaks that we need to investigate. I suspect more likely is that there will be new common ways to make mistakes that apply only to Rails 6. And since fundamentally it's looking for common mistakes, we're going to need to understand, well, what are the common mistakes people are making now? And then look for that. Now, we actually just already support a number of different versions of Rails. There are reasons you really should not be using old versions of Rails, but people do. So it does support looking for well-known problems in older versions of Rails. But I mean, that said, if your version of Rails is no longer supported, now is a very, very good time to fix things. I should note, by the way, that I'm a big believer in, you know, not using any one technique for security. Using tools to find vulnerabilities is great, but there's actually a whole bunch of different things you should be doing to make software secure. I actually wrote a little paper. We'll have to, maybe we can get it on the website, of developing what I call an assurance case, which is, you know, let's start at the top. What is your overall goal? How do I break that problem down into smaller and smaller goals until I can show that indeed my software is adequately secure for the purpose? And I think assurance cases can help you there, and we can talk through that. A tool like Railroader by itself doesn't do everything, nor does really any other one tool or approach, but it's a really useful part of that larger set of tools and approaches to make it really, really hard to attack. The CIO best practices that badge, knock on wood, we've not been broken into. I won't claim there's no vulnerabilities. In fact, there was a vulnerability found in Rails last week. It was publicly reported. We updated the libraries and fixed it within an hour. So,
cool.
Because we get immediate reports, we have an automated test suite that actually does 100% statement coverage. So we updated. Works fine, ship to production. And that's all part of that process of trying to make sure your software is secure is, you know you're going to have vulnerabilities in the components that you depend on. So be prepared to get immediate reports, immediately update, immediately test, be prepared to ship. And if you can't ship after your test finish complete, then your tests aren't good enough.
That's my test. Good job. How did Breakman get started?
You know, I actually don't know that. A different project. When I was starting the CI best practices badge, we looked at various frameworks that you could use for the kind of app. You know, and this comes down to, I'm a big believer in multiple tools, multiple languages, for the kind of application that we were doing, where it's essentially a relatively straightforward website, but it does have, you know, some interaction. We basically decided that Rails would be a really good choice, particularly because it was more important that we minimize the development time. At the time, we were not sure what the criteria were going to be. Some people don't mind using really complex frameworks where there's lots of complex decisions to be made, which is great when you have the resources to do it. And, you know, we had other things to do. So Rails, I think, was a reasonable choice for us. And, you know, one of the first questions was, well, wait a minute, if we're going to run Rails, we need a static analysis tool. And indeed, Brakeman was really, really good already then. And it improved since then. So we just want to continue to be able to retain the capability to use that.
Cool, cool. And actually, somebody in the chat room, Roswell, just posted a link for the history of Brakeman, but I won't be reading that right now. I'll be talking to you right now, so that's going to be much more important. So we have this tool, and it can analyze certain classes of things. What's something that it doesn't yet find that it would be nice if it could find?
Oh, man. that's probably a long list.
Sure.
To be honest with you, right now I've been focusing much more on the just making sure that we're ready for people to come in and help improve it. I think the short answer though is making sure that we're prepared for Rails 6, which is coming up later this year. I that's not to say that's the only thing, of course. I'm sure that finding other kinds of problems, that I can guarantee there's a never ending list of ways that people can screw things up. But really Brakeman was pretty mature when we forked it. So I really think that right now I'm way more focused on, you know, making sure that we have everything ready for people to make improvements, and getting ready for Rails 6 would be my biggies.
Now, I know you probably won't want to talk too much disparagingly against the company that decided to take it private, but do you understand the motivation for that?
You know what? I'm probably going to bail on that because... I'm the wrong person to ask. I mean, really, I think the quick answer is that it was essentially bought up by Synopsys. And they make a number of proprietary tools, including Coverity. And I know some people there who are fine people. I don't have anything against the company per se.
Sure.
As I said, I don't really have anything. I have no personal grudge against the person who made an awesome tool that I've been using for years and grateful for it. So you're really going to have to ask him, frankly, why. He has some postings, but I'm not sure that I can do them justice. Again, I'm the wrong person to ask.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. I figured I'd ask the question. Yep.
Sure. Go. Now tossed it back at you.
Yeah. So as this is analyzing the text of your Rails application, is it constructing an entire parse tree of every token in your program?
Sure. Yes. Yes. And in fact, it really needs to, because you really need to do it's better to do whole program analysis. Now, you might say, oh my gosh, that's going to be huge and difficult. But A, memory is cheap today. And B, sure. Most Rails applications are not that huge if you only consider the custom code. Now, that's not true for, there are obviously bigger Rails applications. But I think most people, as much as you can, you're going to reuse existing third-party libraries. They're called gems in the Ruby ecosystem.
Yes.
So there's an equivalent of CPAN called Ruby Gems, where people grab various third-party. And Railroader's really not for that. And so a whole lot of your code, and I think this is true for most applications today, the vast majority of your code is not the custom code. It's the third-party libraries that you're depending on. I mentioned earlier that's important to use this as part of a larger process. We actually use two different approaches to make sure we are immediately notified when a third-party library gets an update. And then we've got the tool suite and so on, test suite and so on. So I think there are other approaches when you're worried about third-party libraries, where, for example, they're not specific to Rails, so you can't exploit some of the facts that you know about a Rails application. But that's okay. Railroader does one part other tools like origin analysis tools, what other people may call software composition analysis tools, can do other parts, and then you bring them all together, and it makes a program that's hard for attackers to attack, and that's the point.
Cool. So what's in the future for Railroader? I mean, obviously you said there's a lot of other things you can check for, but do you have any other goals other than making it more featureful?
More reliable. It'd be nice to do some other things, but to be honest, right now, I'm not so focused so much on the long term as the short term. The short term is we've got a useful program. You can use it today. There are projects that are using it right now. But we would really like more people into the community welcoming. We're kind of small. Okay. But I'm hoping that we can change the small part. As far as long-term, I think that's going to be decided by the community that forms. My suspicion is that for most people, they're going to want to add more checks, but continue in the same vein of it's easy to use, you run it, it gives you things you can quickly act on. And basically stay in that same vein. If we can add support for other frameworks like Sinatra without too much difficulty, that would be awesome too. But I think that's further in the future, and there are reasons that that's harder.
Cool. And Emily Strange, who's a frequent visitor to our chat room, says, How does this implement for automation? Does this have to be manually run for checking file scripts, or can it be automated to run scheduled checks, probably like a CI/CD setup?
Oh, we run it in our CI/CD script on the CI best practices batch. It's just part of the, if I mentioned our automated tests, one of them is sure. Railroader. So, not only do we have, dynamic tests, but we have, the word verification is sometimes used to mean more broadly any kind of checking that you do. So we run dynamic tests, and we, as I mentioned, we test all our statements. We also run Railroader, and we won't even ship to our master. We won't even ship to the master test area until it passes Railroader. That's saved our bacon many times because, it's not that we try to make errors, obviously, but it's really easy to make errors, and some are particularly easy to make. So it's really, really handy to have a tool that, so the quick answer is you can run it by hand directly, but it's really intended to be run as part of your CI/CD, and it really easily fits in that way.
Awesome. And so the previous project, of course, called Brakeman, but why did you choose Railroader?
There's a story behind that. So the whole history of creating forks and so on, I mean, this is not the first time somebody's created a fork or a different project with a similar goal. So turns out a railroader is just if you look in the dictionary, it's an employee of the railroad company. And so I was looking for a name that was related to rails because that's what this tool is for. Sure. But obviously it's clearly distinct from Brakeman. Now, Brakeman, supposed to stop you, but I want a tool that helps you get where you're going. So Railroader is a tool for rails to help you get where you want to go on rails.
Nice. And we have a question also from the chat room, Roswell. How do you test the tests? How do you make sure that this thing is doing the right thing?
Well, that actually turns out to be not very difficult. People have asked me how to test certain kinds of applications. I go, what is it supposed to do? Make sure it does that. So in this case, for Railroader, there is a number of little Rails applications that have known vulnerabilities in them, and it whines and complains if it fails to find those vulnerabilities. And it has a number of different versions of applications in different versions of Rails because we want to make sure that it finds vulnerabilities in different, in applications are built in different versions. Now, I will say that this creates an awkward situation for me because one of the tools that I normally use really complains about Railroader because it's got all these vulnerabilities in it. But their vulnerabilities are in the test suite, not the actual program. So I have to tell it that there's a difference between vulnerabilities in the test suite and vulnerabilities in the program. But that's fundamental. You know, the goal is to find vulnerabilities, so we create intentionally vulnerable programs and use those and make sure that it finds them. Is that clear enough?
Yeah, definitely. And I noticed while you were talking about the name there, I did do some searching around for Railroader. Did you know there's a very popular board game called Railroader from 1963, which I've just discovered for myself? So there you go. Maybe people could test their knowledge on the board game, test their their other things. So yeah, maybe you could do a tie-in. Maybe you could do a tie-in.
I didn't know that, but I'm not terribly surprised. We went through a number of different names. A friend of mine actually recommended that particular name, but I wanted to make sure that there was no other, in particular, no other program that did a similar thing. In particular, Ruby Gem. It was very important to grab a DNS name and a Ruby Gem. Railroader wasn't taken in both cases. So that's, I think, was a key part of the criteria. And, more broadly, I certainly recommend if you're a larger project, try to make sure you own your domain name. I think that's important for the bigger projects.
And I have a bit of a side question for you, David, which is not necessarily related to Railroader, I suppose. In your information that you sent, you were saying that you noticed when you were using Breakman that you noticed through some automated license testing that the license had changed. Now, I'm not familiar with automated license testing, but I'm thinking to myself, I should be, because that sounds really cool. So what do you use for that? How do you do it? You just check to see if the license file's changed or...
The quick answer is there's in Ruby, and in fact, in many ecosystems, there's some tool either with the package manager or a library you can download or command you can download and check for this sort of thing. In our particular case, the tool is License Finder. License Finder is a Ruby program. Now, it can actually handle several different programming languages, but Ruby is unsurprisingly one of them. And it's part of our CI/CD process. We run Railroader, we run License Finder. Now, License Finder doesn't go and look at the individual files. What it's doing is it's looking at the declarations of the package managers and that sort of thing. What I'm trying to do is, much more broadly, risk reduction. I am trying to reduce the likelihood that I'm going to use some software that I'm not legally allowed to use. And I don't want legal problems. So running a simple tool like License Finder, and there's a number of these kinds of tools, basically as part of my CI/CD process means that I immediately find out if somebody changed the license declaration on me. Most of the times when we get reports like that, they're fairly banal changes. It used to be BSD3 and now it's MIT or the other way. I mean, it doesn't really, for typical uses, certainly for us, it doesn't matter. For this CI best practices badge where this kind of, where I discovered this, GPL3 is fine. Apache 2.0 is fine. GPL 2.0 or more is fine. LGPL is fine. MIT is fine. So there's a whole bunch of licenses that are just fine. Usually the thing we look out for is GPL2 only and Apache in the same executable. It's actually never been a problem, but it's the kind of licensing checks that we do. A couple projects didn't declare the licenses correctly. Shame on you. So we then had to track down the legal stuff. And, usually there's been no problem. And so when I first got the report, I expected it to be one of those, there's a change, but not a big, no big deal. And it turned out, oh, wait, this is a big deal. This is no longer open source. But by having those tools in place as part of my CI/CD pipeline, I can discover, oops, I inserted a vulnerability. Oops, the license has changed in one of my dependencies. Oops, a test has failed that used to pass. that used to pass. So a test failed. That's not supposed to happen. I'm a big advocate of run lots and lots of different kinds of checks in your CI/CD pipeline because no one of them will find everything, but the combination can be pretty effective.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice, because it just got me thinking. It's not something that I've really thought about, but a lot of people could very easily end up running software, as you say, that legally has changed that they're not aware of, and that's a real problem. Very quickly, though, you kind of answered this a little bit, but you mentioned it a little bit. I'm picturing the scene where you've discovered that this had changed. Did you drop a cup of tea or coffee, or was there an alarm that went off or something? Because it's quite a big bit of news for you, I imagine.
That's right. As I said, when I first got it, I said, oh, it's another one of these doesn't matter things. So I checked in and I've never heard of that license. What is that license? And so I went over to the – it wasn't really until I discovered the when I started reading the details of it that they had announced on their website months ago, but – shockingly, I can't read every website. I can't even read the websites of every dependency and try to keep up with that. That's just not reasonable. And which is why I think having tools like, license fine. We actually use two different tools. There's another one we use, FOSSA as well, which is a service we use. And so we have actually two different tools to check that our licenses for all the software we use is valid. And that includes, by the way, all the dependencies. It's one thing to look at our direct dependencies, but software depends on other software, which depends on other software, and that is impossible to keep track of by hand. At least you shouldn't try. So I didn't, they had announced on their own website, but it's not until they changed their release version that I'd found this out. I didn't drop my tea. For one thing, I'm not a proper British person. I'm not actually fond of tea. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Other drinks are available.
Other drinks are available. I have my soda right here. I was going, this is a lot more serious than I thought. And to be honest, what I did at first was I said, well, the old version was okay. The old version was a pretty good tool. I mean, we've been using it. So I just fixed it to the old version and said, well, I guess that's what we'll do. And I was frankly unhappy with that solution. Obviously, a fixed version from the past, there's not going to be any improvements. There's not going to be anything else. And so it just kind of gnawed at me for weeks. That's when I decided, somebody should do it. Somebody should do it. And eventually, as I said, I decided, well, I'm somebody. So we're going to, I don't believe in Master Yoda. I think you do try. I'm going to try to create a new, a fork a project that maintains its open source character. And we'd love to have contribution from anyone who's willing to release his open source under that license.
Was it done with copyright assignment, or is this all just because it's MIT licensed?
It's all just because it's MIT licensed. I am intentionally not asking for copyright assignments. I think there are pros and cons, of course, but I'm always very wary of copyright assignments. I think in general, they're a bad idea. I understand why some folks do it. And I think they're particularly dangerous if you're doing a copyright assignment to a company. They don't have the same incentives you do. This is very much everybody, you retain your copyright of your particular piece. And that way, I think that kind of approach is not only so much simpler from a legal perspective, but it makes it much, much harder to do the kind of, whoops, you're proprietary now. Without any kind of recourse. That's not so bad, so much in the MIT license, but in some other licenses that can be more of an issue.
So how did that become, how did the software now, how did Breakman become proprietary then?
Well, to be fair, technically only the newer versions are. MIT lets you do anything, including make it proprietary. That's
right.
Whether or not you consider that a bug or a feature depends on your goals. Okay. And I suspect he had some copyright assignments too. I don't know that. You'll have to ask him. But for sure, it doesn't matter because MIT, you can make a proprietary version of it. Randall, but maybe some of your listeners don't know. I've been doing open source stuff for decades. So. Yes. I've written a lot of stuff about licenses and what they mean, and also about security and how do you make secure software and how do you make secure open source software. So, I have no doubt that he's legally creating a proprietary version. I mean, maybe there's something going on, but I don't know of any reason that he can't do that. It's just not what I want.
Well, I've argued many times that the difference between the GPL and the MIT style licenses is that the MIT license, everybody is an equal player all the way down the line, because anybody can do. Anybody has the same rights as the guy upstream from them. Whereas GPL has this weird behavior where the first owner actually has a very different status than every owner after that.
That's actually only true for the starting situation. I actually don't have any problems with the GPL. I think it depends. I've released software at the MIT. Yes, I know that. I'm well aware. I've listened to your show for years. So I don't have any problem with the GPL. I think the issue here is that the different licenses express different goals. I've released software under the GPL. I've released software under MIT before this. I think you have to ask the question for each project, what are your goals? I think the negative for the MIT license, if you perceive that as a negative, is that anyone can take that software and create a proprietary version of it. And if you want to use that version, it's proprietary, possibly forever. I'll note, for example, it's essentially impossible to turn the Linux kernel into a completely proprietary work. I mean, we can talk about license edge cases all day. Happy to do that. But because everybody has copyright on piece parts, while there's good and bad in every decision, that makes it very, very difficult to take the Linux kernel and tomorrow declare, I'm going to make a proprietary version. You can say that. But making that legally stick is a completely different issue. So in my particular case, I think this is though pretty straightforward. MIT, I'm perfectly happy with the MIT license. And I really want people who previously contributed to think about contributing in the future. So let's keep it. Carry on.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. We're almost out of time, but I do want to point out that I am drinking tea. So thanks, Dan. that's a good thing. Also, is there anything we haven't covered that you want to make sure our audience is aware of about Railroader before we let you go?
Well, I guess there's three quick things. We've actually kind of briefly hinted at it, so I just want to kind of bang on it some more. Really the reason I'm on in the first place, I've repeated it several times, is I would really like some more people to join and contribute. You do not have to be an expert. There's room for many different improvements, including finding misspellings in the word funding instead of finding. So we'll take all suggestions, improvements, pull requests. Certainly, why don't you have them? If you're involved in an open source project, we talked a while back about the CI best practices badge. That's been going really, really well. And I'd be happy to on another time talk further about it. But, we started under 100 a couple of years back, and we're now at over 2,000 participating projects, and we've got something like 280-something with the passing badge. So, and Railroader, by the way, is pursuing a passing badge as well. So I would encourage you, if you're doing an open source project, go to bestpractices.coreinfrastructure.org, get a badge. And I guess the final third thing would be, hey, please, when you're making open source software, lots of people use that stuff. Make it secure. I have some writings that give suggestions on how to do that. I think, for example, if you're using Rails, Railroader, I think, should be a part of your toolkit. It won't find everything, but it'll find stuff right now. And I mentioned, the things called assurance cases, where this idea of what's your high-level goal and keep breaking it down and figuring out how to accomplish each piece so you get to your overall whole. I'll send you some URLs and people can kind of check that out. We did that with the CI Best Practices badge too, where we kind of, what's our overall goal? How do we achieve that and broke it down? And I think that's really important, that thinking of, I can't do one thing and magically it becomes secure. I've got to really think it through. I've got to take multiple approaches. static analysis tools, dynamic analysis tools, lots of other things to make it so that an adversary has a hard time breaking in. And that's it.
Cool. And two favorite questions. I think you've been asked this twice before, but
yes, I have.
favorite scripting language?
You know, it's probably still Python, although I like Ruby too. Syntactically, they're different, but they have a lot of similarities underneath the covers. So you're going to get 0-2, you know. But carry on.
I know. And text editor?
Text editor is still Vim. Vim is my friend. I do know how to get how to use Emacs. There are reasons to use Vim, and there are reasons to use other tools too. And I will use code for people who write with Emacs.
I think since the last time we talked, I've been picking up VS Code just because it's a beautiful text editor and does a lot of really, really cool stuff. So I'm pretty happy with it because I'm doing it for Dart and Flutter now. And so as a Dart and Flutter Google developer expert, I have to be able to edit stuff. So there we go.
There's a little part of you in VS Code as there is in Emacs.
Is there? I don't think there's a little part of me in VS Code yet.
I don't think so, but there is an Emacs.
Yeah, I know. I wrote the pretty printer for Emacs. Absolutely. Yes, I wrote the pretty printer. Absolutely. And Richard Stallman called it brilliant. So I do have a piece of code that Richard Stallman called brilliant. So that was pretty cool. But he still hates me when I call it Linux and not GNU Linux. But hey, whatever. Yeah. I get to choose that for Harwinder. And I know my friend Linus, who I play pool with frequently in Portland, prefers that I don't say GNU Linux. So, yes. I know that for a fact. He actually put me in a headlock once when I said GNU Linux.
Wow.
I know. Hey, David, it's been great having you back on the show for the third time. If you have something else that you want to talk about, please contact me. You know how to do that. And we'll put you back on the show again. Thank you very much for talking about Railroader today.
All right. And thanks very much for having me.
It was David Wheeler talking to us from somewhere back east. I forget exactly where.
Virginia.
Virginia. There we go. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. It made me think about, I did talk about the licensing stuff as we got off onto, I didn't mean to drag us into a big licensing discussion, but the whole automated license checking and stuff, it's part of the whole overall kind of, problem, isn't it? We need, as David said, we can't all keep on top of, you know, what's going on with different projects and, you know, what security problems, possibly license changes, all these things. So we really need these kind of automated tests. And I think particularly in web development, a lot of people kind of overlook that a little bit because they want to rush to do the newest, coolest thing and all the rest of it. But, you know, security, it may not seem the most attractive or, you know, where all the rock stars seem to be, but it's definitely important. And tools like Railroader sound perfect for the job.
Absolutely. And of course, I had a flashback to last week's show because that was all about, security evaluation and all that sort of stuff. Now I'm having bad flashbacks to last week's show. I should just stop there and plan on resuming my St. Patty's Day week right after the show. So let's talk about who's coming up. We've got Fluid Keys coming up next week, which is it builds on OpenPGP and makes it easy to implement great security access to your organization. EddySync, which is secure end-to-end encrypted and privacy-respecting sync for your contacts, calendars, and tasks. That sounds like fun. Mycroft is the world's first open-source assistant. So think like Siri and Google Assistant, things like that. Runs anywhere on a desktop computer, inside an automobile, or on a Raspberry Pi. That should be pretty fun. It won't run on a Mac desktop, though, yet, which is really weird. It says it runs anywhere, but not on my Mac. Who bad? All right. Ionic, which is a free open-source mobile UI toolkit for developing high-quality cross-platform apps for native iOS, Android, and web, all from a single code base. As a Flutter expert, I'm really looking forward to that show to kind of contrast and compare. And rounding out the schedule so far is Redis. Redis was on a couple years ago, but apparently they've changed a lot of stuff since then, and they wanted to come back on the show and talk about what's new. It's a BSD-licensed in-memory data structure store, uses database, cache, and message brokers, so it'll be kind of fun. Twitch.tv/floss is the homepage for this show. If you have any other suggestions, please, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, Merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is on the webpage, so you don't need to write that down. It's right there. Especially if it's not blockchain or cryptocurrency. We've got enough shows like that these days. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. We took a number of questions from there, including our friends Emily the Strange and who was the other one? Something with an R. Scroll. Is it Reverb, Mike? Oh, Roswell. Thank you, Roswell, for the questions you asked. Follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter or at Merlin Me on Twitter, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I was just at scale, met about 10 potential desks. Get desks. Guess. How about Randall, he's English today. I don't meet potential desks. That doesn't make any sense. So I just need to follow up on them. I will be in Philadelphia in 2 weeks at the Cloud Foundry Summit, April 2nd to 4. So if you're there, please come up and say hi. And I will be at the Pearl Conference, also known as YAPSE, coming up in mid-June. And I'll probably be at a bunch of other conferences before the end of the year is over. But that's all I have to say and all I have to plug. Dan, you want to plug anything?
Yeah, so keep an eye on danlynch.org, which you can kind of see at the bottom of the screen if you're watching the video. That's my blog. I'm doing along with Simon, actually. I don't want to give you more flashbacks to last week, Randall, but along with Simon, we're organizing another Og Camp in the UK, which is our community free open source free culture event, largest one in the UK. It's coming up later in the year. I'm sure I'll give you much more information about that. Maybe Simon will as well, who knows, but that's coming up. So yeah, keep an eye on that and follow me on Twitter and at Method Dan is the place to do that, to find all the kind of stuff I'm up to.
Cool. And Dan, thanks once again for assisting me with today's show. And I'm sure we'll bump into each other in person someday again. I know there's, I think the last time was when I was on that cruise, right? That was a while ago, right?
It's probably 2014, 15, maybe 2015. Yeah. So it's been a little while. Yeah,
and you took me into the cave.
I took you into the cave. The cavern in Liverpool. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. I'll find another cave or cavern that you'll be interested in to go and have a look at.
That'll be awesome. Thanks, Dan, once again. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.